Santan sat by the window. When she placed the lace wedding veil over her shoulders, Anna started to object, and then stopped herself. Anna sat on the bed near her, and neither of them spoke. They could hear the men in the salon below. Someone had been playing the piano a short while before, playing it very badly, but Santan had been able to recognize Chopin's funeral march, and the others had been humming along and beating time to it. Santan had instinctively understood what was happening, that it was their special farewell to one of their own, but she had remained untouched by it. Then, later, she had heard their voices take on that raw, rough quality. They were becoming very drunk, and she knew that this too was part of the ritual. Then there was laughter, drunken laughter, but with a sorrowful underlying timbre to it, and then more singing, raucous and untuneful. And she had felt nothing. She had sat, dry-eyed in the candlelight, and watched the shell fire flickering on the horizon, and listened to the singing and the sounds of war. "You must go to bed, child," Anna had said once, gentle as a mother. But Santan had shaken her head, and Anna had not insisted. Instead, she had trimmed the wick, spread a quilt over Santan's knees, and gone down to fetch a plate of ham and a cold pie and a glass of wine from the salon. The food and wine lay untouched on the table at Santan's elbow now. "You must eat, child," Anna whispered, reluctant to intrude. And Santan turned her head slowly to her.
"No, Anna," she said. "I am not a child any longer. That part of me died today, with Michel. You should never call me that again."
"I promise you I will not." And Santan turned slowly back to the window. The village clock struck two, and a little later they heard the officers of the squadron leaving. Some of them were so drunk that they had to be carried by their companions and thrown into the back of the truck like sacks of corn, and then the truck puttered away into the night. There was a soft tap on the door, and Anna rose from the bed and went to open it.
"Is she awake?"
"Yes," Anna whispered back.
"May I speak to her?"
"Enter."
Sean Courtney came in and stood near Santan's chair. She could smell the whiskey, but he was steady as a granite boulder on his feet, and his voice was low and controlled. Despite that, she sensed there was a wall within him, holding back his grief.
"I have to leave now, my dear," he said in Afrikaans, and she rose from the chair, letting the quilt slip from her knees, and with the wedding veil over her shoulders went to stand before him, looking up into his eyes.
"You were his father," she said,
and his control shattered. He reeled and put his hand on the table for support, staring at her.
"How did you know that?" he whispered.
And now she saw his grief come to the surface, and at last she allowed her own to rise and mingle with his. The tears started, and her shoulders shook silently. He opened his arms to her, and she went into them, and he held her to his chest. Neither of them spoke again for a long time, until her sobs muted and at last ceased. Then Sean said,
"I will always think of you as Michael's wife, as my own daughter. If you need me, no matter where or when, you have only to send for me."
She nodded rapidly, blinking her eyes, and then stepped back as he opened his embrace.
"You are brave and strong," he said. "I recognized that when first we met. You will endure."
He turned and limped from the room, and minutes later she heard the crunch of wheels on the gravel of the drive as the Rolls with the big Zulu at the wheel pulled away.